A little treat this morning. I found something, I came across something yesterday that I thought to share. There was some prior discussion about planning and how much, where you draw the line. And then there's this other over-endeavoring, and where's the line? Proper endeavor, over-endeavor. So with that question in mind, when I read this, I wanted to share with you. August 3rd, 1976, New Mayapur, France. Yogeshwara. Srila Prabhupada, how are we to determine how much of our endeavor should be for our own personal progress? Prabhupada, there is no personal endeavor. There is no personal endeavor. Just like these animals, they have no personal endeavor. They depend on you. If you cut his throat, you can cut. And if you give him protection, you can give him. But they, the animals, have no personal endeavor. That is full surrender. That is our position. Remain fully surrendered to Krishna, and he'll give you protection. That you are thinking, how the animal will live, how these children will live. That is not the children's business, not the animal's business. He is fully surrendered. That's all. Manmana bhavamad bhakta. Other things will be done. Krishna says, yoga kshema vahamyaham. I shall do that. Why your personal endeavor? Yogeshwara. Sometimes, if we are faced with a service, we think it is beyond our means. Prabhupada, huh? What is that? Manmana bhava mad bhakta is beyond your means? That we have already discussed. It is not beyond your means. You can think of Krishna who can check it. Why do you say beyond your means? Bhagavan. Ahaituki pratiyata. It cannot be checked. Prabhupada. It cannot be checked. Ahaituki pratiyata. There's no question of checking. So you can take from that whatever you would like. Now we're carrying on to Canto 10, Chapter 37. Texts 10 and 11. And this is Jiva Goswami's Krama Sandarbha, and he's commenting on those two verses. Narada Muni said, oh, Krishna, Krishna, unlimited Lord, source of all yoga maya, Lord of the universe, spread everywhere, the shelter of all beings, best of the Yadu, Kshatriyas and cowherds, the master of time. I have told Kamsa some facts because I know this will be an opportunity for your pastimes. By your mercy, I know the sequence of your pastimes and the truth about you. Narada explains this in 11 verses. And so that was the first two, and now we're on to text 12, 10:37-12. You are the shelter of all souls, and being the supreme controller, you fulfill your desires simply by your will. We're going to hear this several times. This is the Satya Sankalpa phrase. You fulfill your desires simply by your will. By your creative potency, that's this yogamaya potency, you manifest in the beginning the primeval modes of material nature, and through their agency you create, maintain, or destroy this universe. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes, quote, if you had not created myself, my intelligence in the rest of the universe, then I would not be able to make any requests from you. Pretty clever, huh? With this intention, he speaks. You are independent, Atma Ashrayaha. And by your energies, who are not different from you, Atmana, you create the elements starting from Mahatattva. As you create this world using Mahatattva, you also inspire all people of the world to try to fulfill their desires. In this way, today I'm trying to make requests of you. Very clever, isn't it? This is, okay, Jiva Goswami says, Narada shows the activity of Mahavishnu. This Mahatattva, modes of nature, creation, etc. Mahatattva function. Narada shows the activity of Mahavishnu. Since he is the chief Purusha and suitable for the job of creation. Quote, you create the gunas by your maya, unquote. Since this implies dependence on some other entity, maya, Sridhar Swami explains that maya is a shakti of the Lord. Thus, not independent, or he's dependent upon something, he's independent, and it's his shakti. Paragraph. You are not invested with power by another being like others are. Remember yesterday, Asamordva? You give, so these are secondary characteristics again. The primary characteristic is his form, and within his form is all qualities and potencies and things. And they make the form complete, but the form is the form. Form is the resting place of all other things. Just as the name is the resting place of all things, and the name has form too. You give shelter to yourself, by yourself, since you're not dependent on others. You create the gunas by your shakti. You create the universe by those gunas, which you have created, and maintain or destroy the universe also. You do not depend on others, satya sankalpa, and are thus the Lord, Ishwaraha. Sanatana Goswami writes, even though by the gunas you create, maintain, or destroy all the universes at the appropriate time, at this time, you have appeared to protect the devotees particularly. Hint. This is explained in two verses. Paragraph. Since you are independent, by yourself you shelter yourself. You are devoid of any relationship with Maya. By your will alone you create and destroy. Satya Sankalpa. The Satya Sankalpa is connected not only to the material manifestation, but Krishna's activities. A detail is in the Damodar Lila, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that when Mother Jasoda couldn't bind him, it's because Krishna was exhibiting two potencies, Ichha Shakti and Satya Sankalpa Shakti, that says, no, I want to go steal some more butter and dairy products. You can't bind me. No. So she couldn't. But when her bhakti, persistent, as mothers can be persistent sometimes, she demonstrated her love for Krishna. So Krishna withdrew those two potencies and then exhibited another one, Kripa Shakti, so she could then bind him. In this way, our acharyas say, she controlled Krishna by her love. And that's the glory of the pastime. And it's the glory of Mother Jasoda, and it's the glory of the residents of Braja. Way up there in the hierarchy of the residents of Braja is Mother Jasoda, and others have the same capacity to control Krishna. Like Brahma's prayer, Ajita becomes Jitta. He who can't be conquered becomes conquered by the love of the devotees. So it's back to the Satya Sankalpa phrase. It's an important phrase. There isn't anybody else that has it. He didn't have to lift a pinky. He can lift Govardhan Hill with his little finger of left hand, or he doesn't even have to do that. He can just like levitate Govardhan Hill. He can do anything he wants. But he did a pastime for different reasons. Satya Sankalpa, Shakti. And here the reference is, by that Satya Sankalpa Shakti, he alone creates and destroys. He's not drawing upon any other entity. It's his own Shakti, and he's deploying it. So creation and destruction. For creation, you create the gunas by Maya, which in Maya is a reflection of his internal potency that makes the external potency, which is his potency. Maya is his potency. Mama Maya Duratya. It's his potency. This is his amazing pastime. You create, maintain, and then destroy. Then, all jivas are naturally related to you as relatives. And that's in the verse. We've been hearing there's different kinds of friendship with Krishna. And the more intimate is those who are his relatives in his pastimes. But in the broader sense, all living entities are his relatives. Atmana mashrayaha. You are the shelter of all souls. That's the translation in the verse. You are the shelter of all souls and being the supreme controller. Now this same term, Atmanatmashraya, Sanatana Goswami makes reference to chapter 74. Of Canto 10, Atmana, this is the word for word from that text, Atmana is through himself, that is, his energies. Atmana, Atma, that's Krishna's personal existence, Krishna's form, his, you know, Krishna in his original existence. Because that's who is being addressed. Krishna in his position in Vrindavan is Swayam Bhagavan Krishna. That's this Atma, he himself alone. Now there's different, within that Swayam Bhagavan Krishna, there's all the incarnations. So sometimes, like it's said regularly, the aspect of Krishna that kills the demons is Vasudev Krishna. And that Vasudev Krishna is within Swayam Bhagavan Krishna. Everything is within Swayam Bhagavan, within the source of everything. So Mahavishnu is also, and so by this aspect of Swayam Bhagavan Krishna, known as Mahavishnu, he does things. And that, so the ashraya, having as your shelter, so back to this word, it's in this text 12, so we're spending Sanatana Goswami is spending time with Atmanat Mashaya. You are the shelter of all souls, and you are the supreme controller. So, next. Just by your will, you destroy the demons. Ah, here's the connection of going to Mathura. He didn't say, hey, let's go to Mathura. He's very expert. As with the material world, so also your entrance into the material world, just by your will, you destroy the demons, satya sankalpa. The next verse explains that you appear in the world to destroy the demons. That pastime, though inconceivable, is possible because of your power. Namely, you are the supreme controller, Ishwaraha. Maintenance or protection is mentioned last. This means that now you protect by spreading bhakti, or that protection is your natural quality. Text 13, through his words, he's gesturing in the direction of Mathura. Text 13, you, that very same creator, have now descended on earth to annihilate the daitya, pramata, and rakshasa demons who are posing as kings, and also to protect the godly. So that's, we know that from Bhagavad Gita. And one of the qualities of Krishna, this one, is papa gnani. He is the destroyer of sins. Wherever Krishna is, sin can't stand. Like wherever light is, darkness can't stand. And he also protects the devotees. He annihilates the sins and the sinful. If someone holds on to their sin, they're annihilated. So that's Krishna is that strong. Krishna, like the sun, makes things that are impure pure, and makes the things that are dark bright, and he's very powerful. The sun is very powerful. Doesn't say, oh, okay, you're nice, I won't be so powerful with you. The sun is very powerful. Makes things pure by contact of the sunshine. So Krishna, by his contact, this is his appearance in this world, is all auspicious. So it's just like in the first canto, chapter 1, one of the questions of the sages, now that Krishna is gone, when Krishna was present, just by his moving his feet on the earth, everything was abundant and splendorous and pure. Now Krishna is gone. Where is the protection of religious principles now? And the answer is Srimad Bhagavatam, as brilliant as the sun, risen shortly after Krishna's departure. There's a reference to the same message in relation to Putana. So you can go check it out later from 10.6.3. When the narration is there that Kamsa sent Putana to do her nefarious deeds, Prabhupada's translation, which is killing babies. Maharaj Prikshit naturally is like, he's filled with affection and compassion. So Sukadeva Goswami, right in the middle of the narration, he pacifies his heart by saying, don't worry, the Brijvasis are not going to be affected. because they're engaged in constantly hearing and chanting and remembering the pastimes of the Supreme Lord, so they can't be affected. In Jiva Goswami's commentary to this verse, he says, when Putana was going around doing her nefarious deeds, the persons who were killed were not Brijvasis, they were followers of Kamsa and their children, following what this verse says. Raksho gnani sva karmasu na yatra shravanadini raksho gnani sva karmasu. My dear king, wherever people in any position perform their occupational duties of devotional service by chanting and hearing your glories, there cannot be any danger from bad elements, because Krishna annihilates the bad elements. Now, he annihilates the bad elements for those engaged in hearing and chanting, which is what the Brijvasis do. They're not sadhakas. We're sadhakas. They're perfected beings, and they do what we do. When we become perfect, we'll do what we're doing. The goal of chanting is more chanting. The goal of hearing and chanting the glories of Krishna is more hearing and chanting the glories of Krishna. By so doing, raksha means protection. Raksha gnani, the bad elements are eliminated. Like the sun eliminates darkness, or the sun eliminates impure places to become pure. The example Prabhupada would give all the time, a puddle of urine and the sun extracts the pure water. The sun doesn't become contaminated. So by contact with hearing and chanting, which we have faith in, and which we're doing because we have faith in, the practical effect is invisibly or spiritually, not before our material eyes, purification is taking place. And with that purification, protection. We're protected by that sound vibration, because that sound vibration is Krishna, and Krishna is Raksho Gnani. Therefore, there was no need for anxiety about Gokula, where while the Supreme Personality of Godhead was personally present. So this is speaking past tense. He's speaking to the king. Don't worry. When Krishna was present, everyone in Gokula was protected. No need for anxiety, because he eliminates the sins and the sinful just by his presence. He doesn't have to go around chopping people. By his presence. You know, some persons he chopped, but other persons, so do you remember the verse that says the residents of Vrindavan don't undergo any hardship or material misery? Remember that discussion? It came up several times. Does anybody remember where that was, in what chapter, in what relation to Krishna's pastimes? Those of you who can find it in your notes, let me know. I think it's at the end of the Bakasura pastime. And then when the cowherd boys go back and they say, wow, you know what Krishna did today? And then they're celebrating at the same time their anxiety, but that anxiety is not material anxiety, that there's no material suffering. That seems like a contradiction, right? But it's not. It's just that there's material anxiety and there's spiritual anxiety. So when we return to our purified condition, we go back to Godhead, there's the whole variety of emotions, but it's all ecstatic. And to the material eye, it looks I don't know if I want to go there. Like Vitaragabhaya Krodha. People, the Krodha is people take shelter of impersonalism or voidism because they're afraid. Krodha. Oh no. Person? That means anxiety? If I have love for somebody, then I'm going to have anxiety because there may be, they may go away or, you know, have a vacation or something. So no love, then just become a stone. But we're not stones. The spiritual, the residents of Vrindavan are not stones. They have all emotion, but not the material kind. So now we're carrying on. Vishwanath writes from chapter 13, therefore I have come today to make a request. You are the creator, mentioned in the previous verse, and have appeared to protect the devotees and destroy the demons who are acting as kings. Jiva Goswami. Having shown his two aspects, Narada now explains the cause for Krishna's appearance in this world in a sequence of pastimes. Though you have this nature, you appear to destroy those who oppose bhakti and protect those who propagate bhakti. Another version has Setu Nam. You protect the kings who enforce bhakti. Now, it was mentioned in the verse there was three categories. We're familiar with two of them. Daityas and Rakshasas. Daityas and Rakshasas. There was this third one, Pramata. Pramata. It was mentioned earlier. Does anybody remember? And I can remind you. Pra, M-A-T-H-A, Pramata. They're followers of Lord Shiva that have demoniac tendency. Pramata. And specifically, Jiva Goswami says, that refers to the king of Kashi. The king of Kashi was a follower of Lord Shiva, and he was demoniac. And the king of Kashi had a friend. Who was the king of Kashi's friend? Remember? Pondraka. And Pondraka sent a challenge to Krishna. Krishna said, no problem. He doesn't have to come here. I'll go there. And Krishna went there, finished Pondraka, and finished the king of Kashi. And his head went flying in the air and landed in the kingdom. And so his son started a yajna to create a fiery demon that would kill Krishna. Remember? Sanatana Goswami's commentary, and this is, we'll end here. He who creates this world of good and bad is you. You appear to destroy completely, giving liberation to demons and pramatas in the form of kings like Shishupal. That's Sanatana Goswami is putting him in that category. Worshipper of Lord Shiva. I have committed offense by having your devotees, who should be protected, tied up. Narada is taking the responsibility. So how does he take the responsibility? He first, two visits to Kamsa, kill all the children. Second visit, hey, Vasudeva and Devaki, the eighth child went over there. Protect your backside. I'm going to kill Vasudeva. No, just put him in chains. Now, is that a nice thing to do? Vasudeva and Devaki put them in chains. That we, the commentary explains, it was the word would go to Krishna and Krishna would be intolerant. Vasudeva and Devaki are in chains. So he's reminding him, they're in chains. Do something. Relieve them. The protection aspect. Pritranaya sadhunam. Vinashaya chaduskritam. I mean, Narada has the whole thing planned out. But it's not the over-planning, it's just the facilitating. As he's saying, because you're situated in the heart of all living entities, and in my heart, you're revealing who you are, you're revealing the sequence of your pastimes, and you're revealing my role in the sequence of your pastimes. So I'm coming to you with that purpose. It's time. Mathura, relieve Vasudeva and Devaki, the demoniac kings. Remember the demoniac kings. I'm out here having a great time here in Braja. But demoniac kings, Krishna, Krishna. And one of the explanations, there's several, but one of the explanations of why Krishna doesn't go back to Vrindavan right away, because he promised he would, and he does eventually, according to Jiva Goswami and our acharyas, I have an obligation. I came in this world to kill the demons. So I have to kill the demons. If I don't kill the demons and go back to Braja, they'll go back and harass the Brajbasis, and I won't be doing my protecting program. And then there's others, you know, reciprocating with his devotees in Mathura, reciprocating with his devotees in Dwarka, although they didn't even, Dwarka didn't exist yet, but it's part of his pastime. Dwarka was built, and then everybody was settled in Dwarka, the Yadu dynasty members, because it's a different mood in Dwarka than in Mathura. It's part of his pastimes. He's fulfilling the desires of everyone and annihilating the demons. It's just what Krishna does. So no worries. We just, you know, protection comes when we are engaged in hearing and chanting. It's not like, okay, I can do whatever I like. I just do some hearing and chanting, and it's a nice program. I can do whatever I like. Not like that. The hearing and chanting means dedication, single-minded dedication to the personality of Godhead. At least in our case, this Dasya Bhav, the servant of Krishna, Jivair Sarupaya, Krishnera Nityadas. That's who I am, the servant of Krishna. The higher stages of realization, and like we heard last night, the sense of possessiveness, the intimacy of exclusive and very personal and intimate association with Krishna, that's at a more mature stage. For now, we're sadhakas, leaving behind the separate enjoyer program and taking up Krishna's enjoyment program. That's bhakti, by the way. Krishna's enjoyment is at the heart of bhakti. Anukulyena Krishna Anushilanam. And to revive that, there's the hearing and chanting in the sadhana stage. And when it becomes mature, that's all that one does. I mean, that worldly duties are done, but they're secondary, and the primary is Bhagavad Dharma, hearing and chanting. And somehow, you know, our lives are busy, and somehow mold your life in such a way you can always think of Krishna. And there are various, by hearing and chanting, there are various ways. Again, hearing seventh chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada would say, supposing you can't chant, supposing you can't read, supposing you don't have attraction for those things, you can still be Krishna conscious 24/7. Because Krishna says, and the taste of water, the light of the sun and the moon, and who doesn't see light or who doesn't drink water, and ability of man, and anything. We can remember Krishna in those very simple ways, because Krishna is all-pervasive through his potencies. He's all-pervasive as super soul, and he's all-pervasive. He's pervasive in his vibhutis, like the supremely perfect aspect of any one thing, that's Krishna, but even just Krishna's energies, shabdake. Who doesn't hear a sound? Shabdake, the sound in ether. So, you know, the refrigerator was making some noise, so shabdake. That's preliminary. There's higher. But just seeing God within nature, not that Fiji water bottle is Krishna, because everything is Krishna, right? Everything is Krishna's. So the relationship between his energies and him is part of understanding him. And leave him out, and then it's illusion. It's separate. Well, you know, Bina Prakriti, what about that? Separated. But it appears to be separate, but it's not. That's Maya, is it appears to be separate. So why does Krishna say separated energies? Because it's acting under his direction. You can say remote control, but it's not separate. Even when it's in the unmanifest state, it's under his control. In the manifest state, it's under his control. It's his energy. It's resting on him. Like, you know, the Satya Sankalpa, by his Shakti, Satya Sankalpa Shakti, he creates the modes, and the modes create material existence. And it's through the agency of Mahavishnu, and then there's the Mahatattva, and then the whole thing unfolds, and you got a universe. And then there's living entities that they're inspired by Super Soul for this desire, that desire, according to the modes of nature. Like the whole show is going on under remote control. It is not separate from him. But it's acting as if separate from him. And meanwhile, Krishna is not preoccupied with our little enjoyment ideas and facilitating them. And that's what God's supposed to do, is facilitate our enjoyment ideas. Otherwise, you know, I'm checking out. I'll become an atheist. He's not satisfying my desires. I'm leaving. To where? There's no escape. There's voluntary and there's involuntary, but there's no escape. Like the criminals. I don't accept the government. Okay, here's a place for you. Jail. The government doesn't exist. Okay. And the laws of man are fallible, but the laws of God are not fallible. So we're hearing these verses. This is Narada speaking to Krishna about his personal form, his qualities and characteristics, which are secondary, manifest by his own potencies. And because he's created this world, and this world has good and bad, he appears to protect the good and annihilate the bad. Okay, Krishna, there's some bad people, and they're on the other side. Let's go. He's not twisting Krishna's arm, he's facilitating Krishna's desire. So let's see if there's some discussion.
Guru Maharaj, just some sharing. I think the initial days of your visit, I was asking you this question that, you know, this tendency is there to discount the killing of big demons by Krishna and this. I just wanted to share that, you know, all these days of hearing so many descriptions. We heard of Bakasura and Keshi and Arishtasura. And so hearing these descriptions, the understanding that I was getting was that, first of all, in the descriptions, it's so much it's given, like how great or strong these demons are, like Arishtasura's hump, it's reaching the clouds. Mm. There's so much description that is given. And yet, Krishna, just with his pinky, is taking care of this. So, the question I had initially, and it kind of got answered over these 20 days of hearing back to back. Very nice. What I got out of it is to look at it from the flip side, in the sense that no problem is a problem for Krishna. The demon can be as powerful as he is, but the Lord can take care of. Or if we look at the demon minus Krishna, then it's a big problem. But seeing in relation with Krishna is nothing. That's what I was getting, and I was also relating that with the chanting of the holy name. That I was also expressing to you that there is so much mechanical and inattention and all that, and I was trying to relate that. I mean, that's a problem for me, but you know, for Krishna, it's not a problem. So it was very powerful hearing every day, back to back, sandwiching work in between. it was a very fantastic and powerful experience, Guru Maharaj. I just wanted to thank you for that.
I'm hearing twice, preparing and then speaking. And it takes about as long to prepare as it does to speak, although I'm just reading. It's been a nice experience for me too. You know, finding this verse and what does the BBT say and this word, and you know, connect the dots, and nice.
Guru Maharaj, just one more question. With respect to chanting, if chanting is a relationship, I keep hearing, and you know, in a relationship there is two sides, right?
Yes.
There is you offer something, and
yes,
not in a business kind of way, but you it's a relationship of two persons.
Submit and accept.
So I was just wondering, I'm very much in the initial stages of developing that relationship with the Holy Name. But how do you see the reciprocation of the Holy Name in the initial stages, at least? Because when there is this reciprocation...
Well, the initial stages is Chaitadarpanamarjanam. And, you know, let's say at least two things. Some of the things that are superfluous just disappear. Second, by cleansing, I'm finding, you know how much dirt there was? I had no idea. There's this and there's that, and there's the other thing and the other thing. That's a practical experience of the Chaita Darpana Marjanam. And then, you know, there's strength to carry forward. You know, there's many ways to say. In the room, just those of us that are here, how many hours have been spent in academics? And for what purpose? Well, you know, artha. So that's become our dharma, is like, you know, do well in school because then you can have a good job and then you can have money. So it's kama. And, you know, it's a big investment of time for that purpose. So now, how restless we become when it comes to chanting, and, you know, add up the number of hours that we've all chanted. It's not equal to the number of hours that we've been preparing for our, you know, economic development. But the real mission of life is not that we shouldn't have some employment or some means of maintaining ourselves, but how important is the mission of life to us? And so we're spending some time. And there's a result. It's changing our picture of the world around us and what's the meaning to life and all those things. So it's not like we hit 10 already, but it's not as it was before. Our perspective on life is changing. You know, it'd be nice if it went faster, please, but, you know, that's a practical experience of the effect. And then there's, you know, this whole thing on negative emotions. People that don't have spiritual shelter, they're just tossed around like a piece of wood on the ocean. It's a really rough ride. Sometimes it's a little more calm, and sometimes, and so we're equipped with a means to have another shelter and have that rough ride, you know, more detached and manageable. It can still be a rough ride, but we have shelter that others just don't have. Whew. And they go mad and do angry things and destructive things. And etc. There's practical, it's subjective, but practical acknowledgement of the benefits of the bhakti process. Next.
Oh, sorry, I didn't see that.
I have a few questions I can go through. This one's from an older class. I was wondering if there's some more information about what Niti Shastra is. I heard it in an older class, and it was in one of the readings.
I had the same question, so I looked it up. And my memory isn't really totally sharp on this, but it has to do with practical instructions for practical things of life. Like Chanakya Pandit's sayings are in that category, but it's not just Chanakya Pandit. It's a category of instructions in practical matters of life. That's the meaning. far as I can recall.
Okay. Is there any connection with Niti Shastra and so-called superstitious things that we learn, well, that I learned growing up, things like don't leave the shoes upside down, or don't, you know, run an empty scissor, or things like that. Would you know anything of any connection like that?
I would say, is your question is there a connection? And my reply would be, there may be, but before you can say yes or no, you have to become familiar with Niti Shastra, because that's the Guru Sadhu Shastra. That's how we verify things. So there may be, there may not be.
Okay. Yes, Maharaj.
I mean, it's not just when you're growing up. It's in ISKCON. There's superstitious things that we hear, and we, you know. Do we want to verify by Guru Sadhu Shastra? I'll share one with you, because it came up recently in someone's home about not taking tulsi leaves on the Dwadasi day. Have you heard that one?
Yes.
So that came to my attention in one home visit. So I pursued it. And what I found is it's in the deity worship ministry manual, but they don't know why. Like, what's the pramana for that? They don't know why. So they asked, they did a little research and found out, well, it was in the compilation that Krishna Kshetra Swami did when he was deity worship ministry in a Panchatrika Pradeep. And it's there, so it just turned up in their manual. And so they teach it. They've been teaching it. When he was deity worship ministry in a Panchatrika Pradeep. And it's there, so it just turned up in their manual. And so they teach it. They've been teaching it, you know, since they had a ministry. But what's the pramana for it? They don't know. That doesn't mean trash it. But where did, you know, this, I'm just an illustration of maybe there's a basis for it, maybe not. There's no harm. And if there isn't pramana for it, you pick the Tulsi Sankadasi pretty well that day. You don't pick the mic. So, but is it a superstition, or is it, so that's how you find out. And so I was told, it's Krishna Janmashtami, we're all really busy, but we're going to research, and Krishna Kshetra Swami hasn't come back to us yet. Because maybe he's like, I don't know how I got there either, I'm going to go do some homework. But that's how we check against superstition. There's some other ones in ISKCON, but I won't go into it.
Okay. Thank you. That was helpful. My other question is in relation to negative emotions because of the recordings.
Yes.
I was thinking a little more about, you know, some people can tolerate and navigate negative emotions much better than others.
Yeah.
That's just what it is. But I was wondering if this ability to navigate the negative emotions better or worse in different people is related to karmic background at all.
Sure.
Okay.
Karma and guna. Yeah. It's like the question yesterday about, yesterday evening, about astrology. So there's influences acting on our life, and you can talk about them in this way, that way, the other way. And astrology is one of those ways. Okay, so now this influence is acting in my life. And it's creating, the influence is creating a negative emotion. So is that astrology karmic related? Of course. So now what are you going to do about it? It's karmic related, just like throw your hands up in the air and say, going to have this negative emotion. Anyway, it's not quite, we're just to be a passive punching bag to what the karma is. But so to be able to handle it better or worse, because that's your question. Here comes a, you know, I'm going down the path of life, and here comes an unexpected experience. And then you have, the more you're in the mode of goodness, that's guna, the more you have the capacity to not react, but reflect, and consider carefully, like the discussions yesterday, right size the emotion. How important is this really? And if you don't have a mode of goodness sense of what your mission in life is, then it can just overwhelm you. A little thing. And get consumed in it and etc. etc. So it's karmic and mode of goodness for just people in general. And then you cultivate the mode of goodness and it gets a little easier. Doesn't mean you don't have, you know, conflicts or obstacles or all those things. But you can handle it better because your modes are higher, your consciousness is higher because your modes are higher. Because your consciousness is higher, the modes are higher. That's karmic and guna, both.
Something else that you said yesterday, which I really appreciated and was thinking about more, is you gave the example of like traditional or older generation, the way people looked at obstacles, where it's just a bump in the road and you move on. And nowadays, the approach is, the modern approach is, I have to do something about this to get comfortable. There's less tolerance and acceptance, basically. And I was really thinking about this. It's almost similar to the idea that today our society like stimulates, everything in society is to stimulate our senses. And it's really hard just to get away from that sometimes. So I was thinking in the same way that in one sense society is like, life is so stimulating, it's even more difficult to tolerate and accept things. It's like a really helpless situation sometimes. So that's where my thoughts were going after hearing that about old generation versus the way we live today.
Well, and just to add to that is one of the waves, and you know, it's social activism. It's not totally new. It's been around for about, you know, a decade. But social activism doesn't see the root. You get absorbed in making things better or making the world a better place or green or, you know, gun violence and, you know, whatever it is, Black Lives Matter. You know, social, political activism. Completely lost is the root. Now, what do you do if you're, you know, trying to be Krishna conscious in an atmosphere that's like abundant social activism, political activism? And it gets, you know, as far as I can see, it gets really violent. To replace the violence, it gets violent. I saw that during my period. You know, the counterculture movement and down with the pigs. That was one of the slogans. Yeah, there's a few of them. And it was really violent. And I looked at that and said, whoa, whoa, whoa. these violent people are facing those violent people, there must be another solution. But some people don't look at what's the other solution. You know, how do you stop the problem? Like birth, death, disease, and old age. Well, just, well, wait a minute. Why do I have to endure that? So, it's similar to the comment that you're making. The very nature of evolution, and there's different favorite flavors and brands of evolution at different times in history. It moves. But it's the essence is illusion. Happiness is the object of the senses and the senses, and it becomes nice, and it becomes an obsession. And you lose reality. So now, what are we supposed to do? Because we're in that atmosphere, we need a strong sadhana, and we need to take care of our needs. Whatever that might be for different people, and you strive to reduce the extraneous ones, so that you have time and energy to focus on the primary ones, the primary needs, and in your relationships, the primary needs, and you do that. And there's not a lot of people who want to do that. Manusha namsa asrisha. But we do it anyway because that's the real solution. And then we try to share in appropriate ways. And even if people aren't interested, we're being their real friend. And maybe some people will realize. Or maybe it'll be realized later, 20 years later, or something. A little light goes on. Wow. Okay. Something else?
Okay, this one is connected to what you just said and also the tweet you read from the Prabhupada, the letter you read from Prabhupada.
Yogeshwara, yeah.
Yes. You just advised that we should take care of our needs. And I think I didn't understand what Prabhupada was saying in that letter you read. I just didn't get it. So I wanted to understand, what did Prabhupada mean when he said, there's no need for personal endeavor? What is personal endeavor, I guess?
Well, it's selfish.
Oh, okay. So it's not taking care of...
We take shelter. His point was, you take shelter of Krishna, Krishna will take shelter, take care of you. Focus on bhakti. Not focus on, you know, personal, like liberationist. It's... strive for pleasing Krishna. Manana says it is his reference. And Ahoitukya Pratyata, that's the other reference. There's no need. I mean, it's the personal is a subset of Krishna. And so his example, the animals. You can cut the animal's throat, or you can protect the animal. They're dependent. He was using the word, they're surrendered. You know, they're not necessarily surrendered, but they're subject to your care. Mm-hmm. But Krishna has that care for us. We just need to serve Him. We don't need our personal development. We don't need a separate personal development endeavor. It's a subset of... So it doesn't mean we don't take care of obstacles when they come our way. You know, in the door comes somebody with a gun. And we don't like, Krishna, Krishna. No, we'll do something. But as we're doing something, we're depending on Krishna. You know, career development, or whatever it is. You know, learning how to deal with social media. You know, to like, Krishna, take care of that. I'm just going to chant and read. We do things, but it's with that sense of dependence. And that's, within that is our personal development. And then you know, second question, but what about we're given some service we don't feel capable? What's the not capable? It prompts going right to the bhakti message. What's the, you know, manmana bhava bhakto, what's the not capable? Well, it's my mind. How are you doing? Anybody else? Okay, we have one over here. And then I'm up. He's absorbed.
He's absorbed.
I'm sorry. Hare Krishna, last few classes we have been seeing the theme that Narad Muni is genuinely glorifying Lord Krishna. And my question is, in our lives also, sometimes people appreciate us or glorify us genuinely, and sometimes the appreciation is not genuine. So my question is a two-part one. How do we process when the appreciation is not genuine? How do we know when the appreciation is not genuine? How do we process it and respond?
Well, those are three questions in one question. I mean, a simple one answer is, let's just take it for granted we're mixed devotees. So keep it simple. I'm a mixed devotee. I'm not there yet. And so I'm going to be vigilant, knowing that I'm a mixed devotee, where it's not genuine. Now, we can just beat ourselves up and say, oh, I'm not genuine. that's not advisable. But, you know, one of the ways to see that it's genuine, it's steady. You know, we're unsteady. Sometimes and sometimes not. So, just assume there's a mix. And when it's not genuine, you know, we lose focus on Krishna. When it's disgenuine, the focus goes to us. We're looking for recognition and acknowledgement. Hey, you're really up there in this spiritual path. And we want that recognition from others. When it doesn't come, we're feeling, wait a minute, I'm not being recognized. There's an absence of humility. Genuine is there's a presence of humility. It's just for one thing. So when there's symptoms of lack of humility, then there's a good sign. It's not genuine. Not for the pleasure of Krishna, it's, you know, it's something else. So how do we process it? I need to hit the reset button and go towards pleasing Krishna. And it's just like, there's a continuous effort of redirecting our attention to Krishna. So when does that stop? You just continue to do it. That's how you process it. Let's just say, you know, attentiveness in chanting versus inattentiveness in chanting. What do? You be attentive. And how long do you have to do it? Indefinitely. Not intermittently. Well, I'd like to get to the point where I don't have to make that effort. Don't have that desire. Make that effort. And continue to make that effort, becomes your way of life. That's how you process it. You strive for purity and you're never there. But the purity bell rings, okay. That's how you process it. Okay?
I had a follow-up question. The area that I struggled in this connection is sometimes people, they glorify or they appreciate you and they have some ulterior motives in doing that. And so I just need some help with how do we...
You smile. Next. Don't judge. And don't, like, you know, don't protect yourself, manipulate things. And just... take shelter of Krishna. And by that purity, you can be a positive impact upon someone who's doing whatever their thing is. And Krishna will give you intelligence how to best be of service to that person. Let's go, online.
The first question is from Sujata Devdasi Mataji, and she says, Guru Maharaj, anxiety is a lower mode of nature, but anxiety experienced in separation of Krishna, anxiety experienced. Anxiety experienced in separation of Krishna. The anxiety experienced by pure devotees in the service of Krishna. How should I understand that, Guru Maharaj?
Well, to understand it, you have to go there. And otherwise, you can just imagine that you understand it. The primary is their attachment to Krishna. And along with attachment to Krishna comes different emotions, transcendental emotions that enhance their attachment for Krishna. So that's what it is. But you know, what's that like? Well, that's how you understand. You have to go there, become attached to Krishna, then you can understand it.
This question is from Navya Chanda Mataji, and she asks, Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj, can you please tell me how to get rid of free will?
How to get rid of free will? Stop existing. Next.
This question is from Pooja Chopra Mataji, and she asks, Hare Krishna, I have started my journey to understand the Gita, and I am on a very, very initial stages in my journey on Krishna consciousness. My question is, the day I read the Gita or listen to the verses, I get very good sleep.
Very
good sleep.
No? Why are you listening to it that night? He can't. He's... Throw some water on me.
Sophie asks, why is that? Why do I feel so relaxed and peaceful?
Oh. Well, that's a natural state, but you know, just keep going and then you'll start to feel an anxiety again. That's because of condition. But you feel natural when you connect with Krishna, but we're also conditioned, and so that will change until we become more purified. And then you're eligible for transcendental anxiety, like the earlier discussion. Go ahead.
This question is from Madhavi Manjari Devidasi Mataji, and she asks, Maharaj, when new devotees are being engaged in the temple services like garland making, how strictly should they be following the rules of cleanliness in terms of bathing and clean clothes? And if they don't, would they be committing seva aparadha?
Garlands are for the deities. You know, you may be making a garland that's not for the deities. And then the standard is different. I mean, you know, the fastidiousness of standard is different. But when you're making garland for the deities, you should be fastidious with the standards. Because what's going from the hand of the person who's making the garland is going directly on the deity. It's like doing deity worship. Ask this question.
How fastidious should you be when you're going on the altar and dressing the deity? You'd have to be very fastidious, very clean, if you know, etc. So the God making is like that too. Now, this temple, that temple, the other temple may not enforce the strictness. But that's not as nice for the deity, because cleanliness is, and punctuality are the two most important items. Next.
The next question is from Uttama Bhakta Das Prabhuji, and he asks, can demons be technically called devotees of Lord Shiva, as they are sometimes called, because a devotee gives pleasure to the master, but it looks like demons are just slaves of their own desires?
Yes.
This is regarding the possessiveness. So, possessiveness towards the service. So, what I've been learning when I was from small, like coming from a big joint family, like whatever you have, you share. That's the value which I come from. And so, sometimes the same thing I just try to do with my, when I'm doing the devotional thing. Service, but I sometimes counteract with lot of people who are just like so obsessed with their service or anything. We ask, oh, is there something? It's like, oh, this is my service. They just try to protect it. Sometimes it just, I don't know, it, for me it becomes like my advocates, and they say that, oh, you are a fool when you have something you are sharing, but this is my service, my thing. But what I've been seeing is that if anything, even if for me what I was, for me how I'm processing is anything we are getting, it's like a mercy of Krishna. If Srila Prabhupada didn't have compassion, you would have not got all that, this. So sometimes it is very disturbing for me when I see, when I go into those areas, how do I see, or how do I act when this type of things.
A few things. Possessiveness, that as we were discussing yesterday evening, that term, it's your relationship with Krishna. It's not the expansion of service that's kind of territorial, like a dog. This is my territory. Woof, woof. Not like that. Not that kind of possessiveness. But the relationship with Krishna is very focused, very personal, very direct, that kind of possessiveness. Now, taking this other idea, second part, when some people are very possessive about their service, like stay away, that's like a dovetail. It's someone's has guna and karma like that, and they've given some service. So they're being given an opportunity to purify themselves through service. And they're, you know, by Krishna's mercy, maybe they get on the other side of that material sense of proprietorship. It's acting then for Krishna's service. It's not meant for your territory. And then, so how do you process it? You'll just appreciate, there's good and karma. This particular Buddha, that particular karma. And my value, so you just abide by your values without being judgmental. It's how you process it. And you're the disturbed mind, and I don't, you just stick with the value that you understand is pleasing to Krishna. and you abide by it. I mean, it's a little related to Bruma's question, but we're in an atmosphere that's so sense stimulation oriented. So we may be in a situation where people are very body conscious and therefore territorial about their service and so on. And that's just, you know, it's the world in which we live. It's just one part of the world in which we live. So you just acknowledge it and live by the value. Align your mind and your heart with the values that you know are pleasing to Krishna. And don't be judgmental of others. Be well-wishers to others. May Krishna be kind to this nice devotee, that the day will come where they won't have to think like that. But this is a managing of negative emotions thing. So your negative emotion is your problem, not their problem. Their problem is too much something, and your problem is I'm disturbed by their too much something. So, let go of that and go to the higher place, that I just want to be pleasing to Krishna and be in pure Krishna consciousness as far as my limited capacity, and be a well-wisher to living entities. Look, they're serving Krishna. There are lots of living entities not serving Krishna at all. How fortunate they are. May Krishna purify them. Not judging, just well-wishing. And stay the course with your mind, your heart, and your values, and your conduct. Easier said than done, but that's the advice. Well, end there. Thank you very much. Prabhupada.
Good.